Good afternoon. I'm David Chappell. Welcome to this talk on business models for software as a service, SaaS. I'm kind of sorry the room isn't totally full, but doing a talk on business models at TechEd is not going to get you a big audience because most TechEd attendees don't care about business models. And in that respect, they are totally mistaken. They are totally mistaken because let me tell you where this talk originally came from. Microsoft, a little while ago, hired me to write a longer version of this talk and present it in cities around the world. Why? Because Microsoft really wants Windows Azure to be successful as a platform for SaaS applications. But this talk never even mentions Windows Azure. Here's the thing. Microsoft found that ISVs, software companies, were building SaaS applications on Azure and getting the technology right without problems. The public cloud, often on a cloud platform such as Windows Azure. Not always, but often. Let's think about the kinds of change that this transformation entails. It's useful to view this change in two dimensions. Change in technology and change in business model. Think, for example, about this. Think about a software company, an ISV, introducing a major new release of its flagship on-premises software, its flagship SAP software. There might be lots of technology change, some anyway. It's a big new release. Maybe there's a bunch of new technology in there. But there's almost no business model change. They're going to sell this new version just like the old one. Same channels, same pricing, and so on. Contrast that with this. With a services firm, a company that builds custom applications, but now decides to release its first on-premises product. For them, the change in technology is small. They know how to build applications. But the change in business model is huge. To go from selling consulting services to selling packaged software. Big change in business model. Now let's think about one more example. An established ISV, an established SAP ISV, an on-premises ISV, that decides to offer its first SaaS application. On this chart, I'd put them up there. There is substantial technology change in going from on-premises to the cloud, from SAP to SaaS. But if you look in my diagram, the change in business model is even bigger. It's even bigger. A picture. In software as a product, on-premises software, SAP, customers run the application in their own data center. It looks like this. In software as a service, SaaS, customers rely on, commonly, a shared multi-tenant application running in the cloud. And so from this diagram, it's obvious that there is substantial technology change. If you were in the session I gave before this, we talked about that technology change. And that's important. Getting that right is really important. But in my experience, most ISVs don't have trouble getting that right. We're technical people. We can do technology. It's the business model change that is so hard. Because the business models used in the SaaS world are very different, usually, than those used in the traditional SAP world. In fact, when you're adding a new SaaS offering, along with the new technology, you have to figure out what your new SaaS business model will be. It almost certainly will not be the same as the business model you use today for SAP. If you are an on-premises SAP ISV today, and you add a SaaS offering, it's a safe bet that that business model will not be the same as the one you have today. And so you have to find a successful SaaS business model. What do we call organizations that are looking for a successful business model? Answer, we call them startups. We call them startups. That's what startups do. And so, I'd like to suggest to you that even in a current existing ISV, offering a new SaaS application should be thought of as a startup. Okay, so here's the truth. For a long time, I just hated that term business model. What the heck is a business model? Nobody agrees. There's all kinds of different ways to think about it. But today, I love the term business model because I finally run across a coherent, clear, useful way to think about it. And that way is something called the business model canvas. This thing is described in a book called Business Model Generation. Who's ever seen this book? Anybody? I see a couple of hands, a few hands. The rest of you, please go home tonight and order this book. This book is so good. Those of you who read it, do you agree with me? Yes, please nod your heads. It's a wonderful book. It's also fun to read, written like a cartoon in some ways. It's just a great, great book. The key thing the book defines is this canvas, a simple 9-box model for thinking about business models. Here's what it is. At the heart of the canvas is the value proposition, your offering. What is it you're trying to sell? Next, there are 3 boxes about the customer. What customer segments are you going after? What channels will you use to reach those customer segments? And given those channels, what kinds of relationships can you have with those customers? There are then 3 boxes of infrastructure, how you will create your offering. What key resources do you need? What key activities must you undertake? And who are your key partners going to be? Then finally, there's money. Cost structure and revenue stream. Simple nine-box model. And by the way, as I said in my previous talk, I'm happy to have you take pictures of my slides. I will also send you a PDF. Or if you have a USB key, come out to the talk. I'll give you a PDF right away of the slides, if you'd like. But even better, go buy this book. It's really, in fact, order it right now. I'll wait. Well, I can't really wait, can I? But I wish I could, because it's really a good book. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk through an example of a fictitious and imaginary ISV that currently sells an on-premises, a SAP application for doing project management. I'm going to imagine that they want to offer a SaaS version of their application. I want to look at the current SAP model, the SAP business model, and then walk through how it changes for their new SaaS offering. It turns out that this is a pretty complex topic, and there's lots of things we could do. I've chosen to do this to walk through one concrete example to try to illustrate clearly what kinds of changes are common with SaaS business models. Please recognize, however, that this is an example. By no means the only possibility, but a common example of what SaaS models look like and how they differ from SAP models. Okay. Great. This company is pursuing a SaaS offering because they think they can go after some new customers. Right now, what they target is customers who are medium to large enterprises. My fictitious ISV is offering a project management application that is designed for large projects. I live just outside San Francisco. They're building a new Bay Bridge from where I live into the city. It costs, I think, $7 billion. I imagine that kind of project is who they sell to. They're very high-end right now. And so their customers want a powerful project management solution, and they'll pay a lot for it. This company, though, has decided that there is a new customer segment they can reach with a SaaS application. And so their decision to embrace SaaS is driven by this belief. Here's what changes in their SaaS business model. The customer segment they're going to target is no longer medium to large enterprises, but rather small and medium business, smaller firms. Those customers want a simple and easy to use application for small to medium projects, and they're willing to pay a moderate amount for it. This company is going after a larger market of smaller, more price-sensitive customers. Okay? This is a very common reason for why existing ISVs build SaaS applications, to try to reach a larger market of more price-sensitive customers. It's not the only reason, but it's a common reason. In fact, let's think more generally about this. Suppose you are an existing ISV. You sell software today. How should you decide whether or not to offer a SaaS application? I have a simple decision tree here. It has two paths, two branches. Those branches, those paths, are rooted in the dominant human emotions. What are the dominant human emotions, at least around business? You know, they are greed and fear. Would you agree? For business, those are the dominant emotions, greed and fear. But let's be more polite, should we? Let's call them, rather than greed and fear, let's call them grow your business and defend your business. Those sound better, don't they? Just remember, we're talking about greed and fear here. Okay? In the grow your business path, the greed path, the first question an ISV should ask itself is this. Can you boost your profits with a SaaS version of an existing application? In my example in this talk, the project management software company, they asked themselves that question, and the answer was yes. So they're building a SaaS version of their app to target smaller, more price-sensitive companies. And by the way, I'm so glad the room has filled up, because it's such an important topic for all of us, I think. Even here at Tech Ed, business models matter. But suppose you're an ISV and you think that, in fact, you cannot make more money with a SaaS version of your current app. Well, second question on this greed path is this. Ask yourself, can you profitably enter a new market with a SaaS application? If the answer is yes, then go ahead and build that new SaaS application. What's an example of that? The best example I know of a company answering yes to this question is Google with Google Apps. Google said, I can use SaaS, this enormous shift in how we build and sell software, to go after what is perhaps the best business in the history of capitalism, Microsoft Office. Office is a great business, isn't it? Its margins are pretty high. Its customer base is pretty big. I won't use that M word, but you know what I mean, right? Its customers are loyal. I wouldn't say locked in. I would just say loyal. It's a truly great business. And there have been many attempts to displace that business. They all failed. When do these kinds of dominant businesses become vulnerable? Well, you know the answer. It's when there are huge platform shifts, like from mainframes to client server, and now from on-prem to SaaS. Google said, great chance to try to actually disrupt one of the best businesses ever by using SaaS. Could you do that? Think about it. Suppose you're an ISV. You've asked yourself both of these questions on the greed path. And the answer is no. Well, you might think, okay, I'm done, but you're not done. There's still the fear path, the defend your business path. The first question to ask yourself there is this. Is a competitor succeeding with a SaaS alternative to your application? If they are, you better respond with your own SaaS version of all or part of your application. What's a good example of that? Microsoft Office 365, which is a direct response to Google Apps. If Google had never done Google Apps, do you think Microsoft would ever have built Office 365? I don't think so. If I were them, I wouldn't have. I've got this great business in Office. Why screw up a good thing? Nonetheless, I admire Microsoft's commitment to the cloud and their realization that they can't just sit still. Maybe you have no current competitors. Ask yourself this: could a competitor hurt you with a SaaS option? If the answer is yes, then plan, prepare to build your own SaaS version. If you're an ISV, you ask yourself all four questions, and you think the answer to all four questions is no, then ignore SaaS. However, if you're an ISV and you think the answer to all four questions is no, you are wrong. You are simply wrong. Because at least this one ought to concern you. Competitors could always appear. The move to SaaS is arguably the biggest change in the software business since the creation of the ISV concept back in the 70s. It's a huge change. It's going to affect all of us. Back to my canvas. My fictitious software company currently offers, as their value proposition, a large-scale project management app that runs in customer data centers. Okay? It's sold as a product with a license at $35,000 per CPU. This is a high-end project management application. For their SaaS business model, they're now going to offer a small to medium scale project management app that runs in cloud data centers. It's a SaaS application. It's sold as subscriptions and it's priced at $39.95 per user per month. Big changes. Do not read anything into the relationship between this number and that one. I just made them up. The truth is that SaaS pricing is a black art. No one understands how to do this. It's hard. It is useful to think about SaaS pricing in three big buckets, three big options. Option number one, by far the most common, is some kind of subscription service. Per user per month is the most common. There are others as well. And it's very common to offer a discount for advanced payment. Like paying the first year up front. You can also do per unit pricing, per transaction, per gig of storage, per connection. This kind of pricing is commonly used with technical SaaS offerings like cloud platforms. This is how Azure charges or Amazon Web Services. The third option is free. Real free means most often that you charge advertisers, not users. People also often think of freemium in this category. Freemium means the basic service is free and you charge for extra stuff. But the reality is that freemium is not a price, it's a marketing strategy. Not a price. Usually you wind up in a subscription pricing model for the extra things. By a wide margin of these three options, this one is most common, by a wide margin. But there's lots of issues, lots of choices. It's not uncommon to offer multiple options combined in different ways. Pricing is hard. Next, channels. How does your product get to customers? Well, in this company, in the existing SAP business model, they have direct sales through their own field sales force and through inside sales, people on the telephone. They also work through resellers, third parties that sell their application. It's very common in high-end software sales today. Microsoft, for example, does all those things. When they do SaaS, however, this changes significantly. First of all, the field sales force goes away. Why? They're too expensive. They're now going after a smaller customer at a lower price point, $40 a month. Good luck supporting a field sales force on that low number. You can't keep them interested. The kind of salesperson who's able to sell big software deals that are five and six and seven figures in dollars, that kind of salesperson loves those big, fat commission checks that buy him the new Rolex or eventually the new Aston Martin. How come sales guys make all the money when we do all the important work? That's a good answer for that, actually. It's because, well, it's just so darn hard to be a good sales guy. It's actually a good answer to that. Anyway. Where was I? It's an important point here, those sales guys versus we technical people. The point here is that the sales guys who will happily sell big deals and get those big checks and buy those Rolexes are rarely the same kind of people who will be happy selling subscriptions at $40 per user per month. Because in that business, the upfront commissions are tiny. What happens is, over time, you build up a substantial commission over several years as you get a chunk of all those subscriptions. But it takes a long time. It's like being in the insurance sales business. It's a whole different world. And so people so often find that as they move to SaaS, they can't keep their sales force. For reasons of money and to some extent personality. In this case, they retain the inside sales force, guys on the phone, but critically, their website becomes hugely important. With most SaaS applications, not all, most, the website becomes a fundamental way that you sell the app because it lets users have a free trial and even purchase, potentially, right there on the site. Very nice. SaaS companies often spend lots and lots of money and time building the best website they possibly can for darn good reasons. It often becomes your most important sales channel. And what about resellers? Well, gee, if you can't keep your own sales force interested because of the pricing model of subscriptions, how in the world will you ever keep resellers interested? They also often go away. What's a good example of this? Lots of resellers today, lots of Microsoft partners, have made money selling, installing, administering Exchange on premises. As Exchange Online becomes more and more popular, that work goes away. And those resellers have a very hard time making any money because of the way Exchange Online is priced. When you go to SaaS, frequently, your channels change radically. It's one of the most difficult things in going to SaaS. In my example here, they're also selling their new SaaS service through a telco, a telecommunications company. Maybe that telco wants to offer a suite of small business services. My ISV here offers its project management service as part of that suite with the telco's brand on it. You might resell that way. And of course, Google AdWords, Big Ad Center become even more important, because people doing searches for project management apps must be sent to your website. Really important. This change is very difficult for many ISVs, not to mention many resellers. Excuse me. This also changes how companies I'm sorry. I swallowed wrong. How companies relate to their customers. In the SAP business model with this company, the relationships are very personal through the sales force and through the resellers, maybe on the phone through inside sales. As they go to SaaS, however, the channels have changed, and so the personal relationships pretty much go away. It's now automated self-service through the website. Although they retain their inside sales, those are still there. How about revenue streams down here? Well, in the SAP business model, they sell their product via licenses. They get license fees. They also charge for customization. It's a big, complex product, installed on site, and then customized as the customer wants. And since it's a complex product, it requires training. So lots of nice revenue streams. With their SaaS offering, things are different. Not license fees, but instead subscriptions. Not much customization because it's multi-tenant. And multi-tenancy implies limits on customization. And because the app is simpler, there's much less training required. It's worth pausing for a moment to think about and look at typical revenue streams for SAP and SaaS applications. Here's a chart showing money over time. First, for a SAP application, an on-prem application. When you start building the app, you're negative for a while, right? You're spending money building the app. Then you release the app, and you get this nice, big, fat revenue spike, if all goes well, because customers like your app. And they're paying you these nice, fat, five and six figure dollar or euro license fees up front. Great. And then something happens, like say a global financial crisis, for instance, and sales drop to zero and revenues drop to zero. And then you limp along, you limp along, you limp along, and you hire a great salesperson. And she does a great job for you. And then she quits, and things fall apart again. And then you build up more revenue. That kind of lumpy, spiky revenue stream is fairly common in SaaS companies because you're selling licenses, big chunks of money at a time, feast or famine. Compare this to a typical SaaS revenue stream. First of all, you're going to spend more up front, especially building your first SaaS application. You're going to spend more. It's harder if you're multi-tenant. Then when you release the application, if you're successful, you will not see that nice big fat spike because you're not selling big fat licenses. You're selling subscriptions, probably, per user, per month. And so you have this slower but smoother revenue growth. Because look what happens here. When the crisis hits and this SaaS product revenue drops to zero, yours stays flat because you still have revenues from subscriptions. One unavoidable fact here is that it takes longer to break even with a SaaS application than a SaaS application. That means it takes more capital to get the business off the ground. Venture capitalists aren't crazy about this, but it's true. The reason people fund those, however, is this. There is potential for even more long-term revenue and profit with SaaS. When I look at the spreadsheets that ISVs put together for SaaS offerings, those spreadsheets are commonly looking very bad for the first couple of years. You lose money for a year, for 2 years. By the middle of year three, you ought to break even. After that, it's gravy. You're doing really well. Just be aware how different the revenue profiles often look for SaaS and SaaS applications. Let me just summarize something here. How much you charge for your SaaS application drives so much else in your business model. So imagine here I have three selling prices: expensive, medium, and cheap. This affects, for example, how much I can afford to spend to acquire new customers. If my product is very expensive, I can spend a lot to get each new customer. If it's moderately expensive, I can spend a moderate amount. If it's a cheap product, I can't spend much at all to get new customers. That implies that expensive products still have sales forces. Do you think enterprises for critical applications, even if they're SaaS, are going to be buying apps off a website with no salesperson anytime soon? I don't. There are SaaS applications out there that are enterprise-focused, that are very expensive, that still have sales forces. Plenty of them. But if your application is moderately priced, you might have only inside sales, guys on the telephone. If it's really cheap, you'll have no sales force. And so that drives your relationship with the customer. Is it personal? Is it telephone? Or are you your website? This also has implications for how much training your app can require. High, a little, or none. And finally, typical customers. High-priced SaaS offerings are for enterprise customers, typically good-sized organizations that want a sales force, that want that kind of high-touch sales. In the middle here, maybe departments or small and medium businesses, SMBs. Down here, probably SMBs or individuals. In the example I'm walking through in this presentation, the example ISV's SaaS offering is in that bottom two rows. But organizations with high-priced SaaS offerings often find that their business model doesn't change that much from SAP to SaaS. Price drives so much of this, and the way money comes in more slowly via subscriptions. All right. Key activities. In the SAP world, your key activities are, of course, building the software, selling the software, and supporting the software, right? Development, sales, support. In the SaaS world, those things still matter, but they change. In cloud applications, it's very common to have new features added every month, 2 months, 3 months. In the SAP world, the on-prem world, people do a new version every what? Year, 2 years, 3 years. In SaaS, it's much more common. And so agile development has become ubiquitous in the SaaS world. In my example ISV, they don't have a sales force in the same way. They now spend the money on marketing, on getting people to come to their website and try their product. And product support is different. They now have a group that, yes, does product support, but also is there to ensure that those subscriptions are renewed. Getting renewals to annual subscriptions is really important. And so these companies will have product support people who have quotas. They have quotas because part of their role is to sell renewals. It's interesting. They're not just the help desk of old. They're a help desk that also sells things. And one more thing. In the SaaS world, operations becomes a key activity because the ISV now runs the software. That's a skill that most software companies don't have today. They've got to acquire it. Even if you run the software, the application, on a platform like Windows Azure, there's still a lot you have to do to monitor it, keep it running, and so on. All right. Next, key resources. In the SAP model, the key resources are the code base, of course, and the devs who know that code base. In the SaaS world, it's still the code base because in my example, this ISV is reusing as much code as possible from the SAP product in the SaaS product. And you still need devs with product knowledge, but now they must also have cloud development skills. And your operations staff are a key resource. The people who run the app for you. In the SaaS world, you are running the app. So it's up to you to make sure it's always available. Key partnerships. In the SAP model, the key partners are commonly resellers, especially in the high end, as this company is, system integrators who install and manage the software and then customize it as needed. In the SaaS business model, this changes completely. I've already shown you how and why the resellers probably go away. And the integrators, well, gee, with a cloud-based application, a SaaS application, you don't need anybody to install and manage the app. It's run centrally. Even customization gets more limited, as I mentioned earlier. So the existing partners tend to fall away, especially with a lower priced offering like this one in my example. A new partner appears, though, who matters a lot, and that is your cloud platform provider. The place you choose to run your SaaS app becomes really important. If they aren't reliable, if they aren't good to work with, you're going to hate yourself. They're an important partner. Finally, costs. In the on-premises model, the SAP model, you pay for developers, you pay for your salespeople, field and inside sales. In the SaaS model, you still pay for your developers, but in my example here at least, you've gotten rid of your field sales force. And now you're paying your operations staff, and you're paying for cloud platform services because you're running the app. This turns out to have a big implication for pricing. I've seen vendors, software vendors, set their SaaS pricing so their revenue will exactly match the license pricing after, say, 3 years. This rarely works. And the reason is that your costs have now gone up. You're paying to run the app as well. And so setting your subscription pricing to equal your current your license-based revenue doesn't work because your costs have gone up. You've got to get more money from the customer because you've taken on more of the expense running the application. Let's summarize this. We walked through the entire canvas, and we found that for customers, this example company is moving from enterprise customers to SMBs for customer segments. Their value proposition, their offering, is changing from large-scale project management to small-scale project management. Their channels change from field and inside sales to web and inside sales. Resellers are replaced with a white label telco. The relationships go from personal to web. The revenues go from licenses to subscriptions. The activities stay the same except more emphasis on marketing, less on sales. And now they must also do operations, run the app themselves. The key resources become the code base and devs as before, but now operations people are also critical. The key partners change completely from resellers and integrators to the cloud platform provider. And their costs also change away from field sales and toward operations. So look at this. In my example, when they go from SAP to SaaS, every single one of the 9 boxes in the canvas changed. Every single one. If this were a high-priced SaaS product, this might not happen. But this is a very common example of how and why existing ISVs embrace SaaS. And every single box in the canvas changed. You got to ask yourself, why in the world would you want to have two such different businesses in the same company? Because here's what I see happening all the time. Existing ISVs begin by doing SaaS within their firm's current structure. They say, we'll just add a SaaS product because they think that SaaS is just about technology change. I've talked to many ISVs who began their journey towards SaaS without even thinking about the business model change it implied. They just began by writing the code. The nice thing about this is it requires the least organizational change inside your company. But what's bad about this? Well, it doesn't work. That's what's bad about this. It doesn't work. Because people tend to have processes for sales and marketing, metrics for revenue that just don't fit well with a SaaS world. And so what do companies do? In my experience, ISVs commonly start right over there, realize it won't work, and then do this. They create a SaaS group inside the larger company. What's good about this? Well, now I can have metrics and processes for this subgroup that are designed just for SaaS. Great. What's bad about this? Have you ever done this? Ever worked in a company where one group of people was doing all the cool new stuff while the other people just did boring things like making money? You ever done that? It creates huge tension between those two groups. It's hard to be stable with that structure. And then, well, how about this? How about option three? Option three says, you know what? Just spin off that new SaaS-focused entity. It's a separate company. Spin it off. This is cool because you can now have a whole new business organized entirely around SaaS. The problem is, it's often impossible. Because if you're sharing code between those two, as in the example I did here of the project management ISV, you can't do that. How could Microsoft, for example, spin off Office 365 as a separate company? It's not possible. So what I see over and over and over in software companies as they embrace SaaS is they start here, they move here relatively quickly, and they wish like heck they could do this, but they can't. So they're stuck here uncomfortably. There are plenty of CEOs of SaaS startups, firms that are born in the cloud, pure SaaS, who will argue that existing on-premises ISVs can never succeed in the SaaS world. Not for technical reasons, the technology is doable, but because of all these business issues. Because the models are so different between SAP and SaaS. I do not think those CEOs are correct. It is possible, but it's hard. It's hard. I really encourage you, if you work for an existing ISV, think about SaaS. It's probably important to your future. And when you think about it, Recognize that what you are doing in adding a SaaS offering is a startup. The definition of a startup is an organization that is searching for a repeatable business model. It's what you're doing in a SaaS addition. I also really encourage you to begin your journey to SaaS with a business model. Software companies so often start their SaaS journey by writing code, by writing the SaaS code, because, hey, we're geeks. That's who we are. But the truth is, failing because you get the code wrong, in my experience, is much less likely than failing because you got the business model wrong, especially things like sales and pricing. So ideally, have a draft SaaS model in place, then start building your SaaS app. It's a draft model. It's going to change. It's for sure going to change. But have something there at the beginning. Final point, takeaway point. SaaS business models are usually, not quite always, but usually very different from SaaS models. To recognize that fact up front, I think, can help a lot in being successful as our entire industry transitions into the brave new world of SaaS. One last thing here. Some references. I'm going to say it one more time. Please go buy this book. I want to be clear. I have no involvement with the book. I get no money. I didn't write it. I just think it's great. It's just great. This is also well worth reading because doing a SaaS app is like doing a startup. And this book actually uses the canvas that we talked about. This is interesting. And if you're into this, I've written a paper on this topic and done a video series that's on YouTube that walks through a bunch of this stuff. I am obsessive about this topic. It's really important. 10 years from now, the majority of our apps will be in the cloud. SaaS is becoming the default way to build software. Getting technology right is really important. Getting business right is even more important, and it's harder. Thank you very much.